The dismissal of Jonathan Edwards from the pulpit and a letter to the Reverend Thomas Gillespie of Scotland. Stockbridge, July 1st, 1751. Reverend and very dear sir, I'm very greatly obliged to you for your most kind, affectionate, comfortable, and profitable letter of February 2nd, 1751. I thank you, sir, for your sympathy with me under my troubles, so amply testified in the many suitable and proper considerations you suggest to me for my comfort and improvement. May God enable me to make a right improvement of them. 'Tis not to be wondered at, dear sir, that you are shocked and surprised at what has happened between me and the people of Northampton. It is very surprising to all impartial and considerate persons that live near, and have the greatest advantage to know the circumstances of the affair, and the things that preceded this event, and made way for it. But no wonder if it be much more so to strangers at a distance. I doubt not but that God intends his own glory in the safety and prosperity of Zion, in the advancement of the interest of religion and the final issue of this event. And I trust also, my good, but it is best that the true state of the case should be known, and that it should be viewed as it is in order to receive in that instruction which divine providence holds forth in it, and in order to proper reflections and a right improvement. And there is a difference among particular persons as to their natural temper, so there is some difference of this kind to be observed in different countries, and also in different cities and towns. The people of Northampton are not the most happy in their natural temper. They have, ever since I can remember, been famed for a high-spirited people, and close and of a difficult, turbulent temper. However, though in some respects they have been a stiff-necked people, yet God has been pleased in times past to bestow many special and distinguishing favors upon them. The town has stood now near 100 years. The first minister, Mr. Eleazar Mather, brother to Dr. Increase Mather of Boston, and Mr. Samuel Mather of Dublin in Ireland, was a very eminent man of God. After him came Mr. Solomon Stoddard, my grandfather, a very great man, of strong powers of mind, of great grace, and great authority, of a masterly countenance, speech, and behavior. He had great success in his ministry, there being many seasons in his day of general awakening among his people. He continued in the ministry at Northampton about 60 years, but God was pleased in some respects especially to manifest his power in the weakness of his successor, there having been a more remarkable awakening since his death than ever had been till then in that town, although since that also a greater declension and more awful departures from God in some respects than ever before. And so the last minister has had more to humble him than either of his predecessors. May the effect be answerable to God's just expectations. The people have in from the beginning been well instructed, have had a name for a long time, for a very knowing people, and many have appeared among them persons of good abilities, and many that have been born in the town have been promoted to places of public improvement. There have been a people distinguished on this account. These things have manifestly been abused to nourish the pride of their natural temper, which has made them more difficult and unmanageable. There were some mighty contests and controversies among them in Mr. Stoddard's day, which were managed with great heat and violence. Some great quarrels in the church in which Mr. Stoddard, great as his authority was, knew not what to do with them. In one ecclesiastical controversy in Solomon's daughter's days, wherein the church was divided into two parties, the heat of spirit was raised to such a height that it came to hand blows. A number of one party met the head of the opposite party and assaulted him and beat him unmercifully. In later times, the people have had more to feed their pride. They have grown a much greater and more wealthy people than formerly, and are become more extensively famous in the world as a people that have excelled in gifts and grace, and had God extraordinarily among them, which has insensibly engendered and nourished spiritual pride, that grand inlet of the devil into the hearts of men, an avenue of all manner of mischief among a professing people. Spiritual pride is a most monstrous thing. if it be not discerned and vigorously opposed in its beginning, it very often soon raises persons above their teachers and supposed spiritual fathers, and sets them out of the reach of all rule and instruction, as I have seen in innumerable instances. And there is this inconvenience that attends the publishing of narratives of a work of God among a people, such as the corruption that is in the hearts of men, and even of good men, that there is great danger of their making it an occasion of spiritual pride. There is great reason to think the Northampton people have provoked God greatly against them by trusting in their privileges and attainments, and the consequences may well be a warning to all God's people, far and near, that hear of them. Another thing which probably has contributed in some measure to the unhappiness of the people's manners was that Mr. Stoddard, though an eminently holy man, was naturally of a dogmatic temper, and the people being brought up under him, and with a high veneration for him, naturally were led to imitate him. Especially their officers and leading men seemed to think it an excellency to be like him in this respect. It has been a very great wound to the Church of Northampton. There has for 40 or 50 years been a sort of settled division of the people into two parties, something like the court and country party in England, if I may compare small things with great. There have been some of the chief men in the town, of chief authority and wealth, that have been great proprietors of their lands, who have had one party with them, and the other party, which commonly has been the greatest, have been of those who have been jealous of them, apt to envy them, and afraid of their having too much power and influence in town and church. This has been a foundation of innumerable contentions among the people from time to time, which have been exceeding grievous to me, and by which doubtless God has been dreadfully provoked, and his spirit grieved and quenched, and much confusion and many evil works have been introduced. Another thing that evidently has contributed to our calamities is that the people had got so established in certain wrong notions and ways in religion, which I found them in and never could beat them out of. Particularly, it was too much their method to lay almost all the stress of their hopes on the particular steps and method of their first work, i.e. the first work of the Spirit of God in their hearts, in their convictions and conversion, and to look but little at the abiding sense and temper of their hearts, and the course of their exercises and fruits of grace, for evidences of their good estate. Nor had they learned, and many of them never could be made to learn, to distinguish between impressions on the imagination and truly spiritual experiences. And when I came among them, I found it to be too much a custom among them, without discretion or distinction of occasions, places, or companies, to declare and publish their own experiences, and oftentimes to do it in a light manner without any air of solemnity. This custom has not a little contributed to spiritual pride and many other evils. When I first settled among the people, being young and of but little experience, I was not thoroughly aware of the ill consequences of such a custom, and so I allowed it, or at least did not testify against it, as I ought to have done. And here I desire it may be observed that I would be far from so laying all the blame of the sorrowful things that have come to pass to the people, as to suppose that I have no cause of self-reflection and humiliation before God on this occasion. I am sensible that it becomes me to look on what has lately happened as an awful frown of heaven on me, as well as on the people. God knows the wickedness of my heart and the great and sinful deficiencies and offenses which I have been guilty of in the course of my ministry at Northampton. I desire that God would discover them to me more and more, and that now he would effectually humble me and mortify my pride and self-confidence, and empty me entirely of myself and make me to know how that I deserve to be cast away as an abominable branch, and as a vessel wherein is no pleasure, and, if it may consist with his holy will, sanctify me, and make me a vessel more meet for my master's use, and yet improve me as an instrument of his glory in the good of the souls of mankind. One thing that has contributed to bring things to such a pass in Northampton was my youth and lack of more judgment and experience, in a time of that extraordinary awakening about 16 years ago. Instead of a child, there was want of a giant in judgment, and discretion among the people in such an extraordinary state of things. In some respects, doubtless my confidence in myself was a great wrong to me, but in other respects my diffidence of myself injured me. It was such that I durst not act my own judgment, and had no strength to oppose received notions and established customs, and to testify boldly against some glaring false appearances and counterfeits of religion, until it was too late. And by this means, as well as others, many things got footing, which have been a dreadful source of spiritual pride, and other things that are exceeding contrary to true Christianity. If I had had more experience in rightness of judgment and courage, I should have guided my people in a better manner, and should have guarded them better from Satan's devices and prevented the great spiritual calamity of many souls, and perhaps the eternal ruin of some of them, and should have done what would have tended to lengthen out the tranquility of the town. However, doubtless at that time there was a very glorious work of God wrought in Northampton, and there were numerous instances of saving conversion, though undoubtedly many were deceived and deceived others, and the number of true converts was not so great as was then imagined. Many may be ready from things that are lately come to pass to determine that all Northampton religion has come to nothing, and that all the famed awakenings and revivals of religion in that place prove to be nothing but strange tides of a melancholy and whimsical humor. But they would draw no such conclusion if they exactly knew the true state of the case, and would judge of it with full calmness and impartiality of mind. There are many things to be considered in the case of Northampton. That many of those have been most violently engaged and have chiefly led and excited others in it, though they have been leading men in the town and have been esteemed considerable for their knowledge, estate, and age, and have been professors of religion, yet have not been the most famed for piety. The leading men who have been most engaged in this manner, who have taken vast pains to stir up others that are inferior, have had this great advantage in their hands that the controversy was a religious controversy. That which I opposed was that they always had supposed to be a part of divine truth, a precious and important doctrine of the Word of God, and that the cause of my opposers was the cause of God. This has led the more ignorant and less considerate people to look on their zeal against me of virtue, and to christen even their passions and bitterness in such a cause with sanctified names, and to let them loose and prosecute the views of their bitterness and violence without check of conscience. They have also had the great advantage of the vast veneration the people had for Solomon Stoddard's memory, which was such that many of them looked on him almost as a sort of deity. They were all, i.e., except the young people, born and brought up under his ministry, and had been used from their infancy to esteem his sayings all as oracles. And he, they knew, maintained that doctrine which I oppose with great positiveness and zeal, and opposed the contrary which I maintain as an exceeding pernicious doctrine. Under these circumstances I naturally appeared as a dangerous opposer of the cause of God, and my teaching and insisting on the doctrine which Mr. Stoddard opposed appears to them a sort of horrid profaneness. Crafty, designing men have abundantly filled the ears of the more ignorant with suggestions that my opinion tends to overthrow all religion, and to ruin the present and future generations, and make all heathen, shutting them out of the Church of Christ. Not only many of the leading men in Northampton have used their utmost endeavors to engage the minds of the common people in this controversy, but they have also put forward by their neighboring ministers all round. My opposers have also been assisted and edged on by some at a greater distance, persons of note, and some great men of civil authority have had a great hand. It is to be considered that the contrary opinion to mine had not only long been established in Northampton, without so much as one opposer to it, but it had also been fully and quietly established for a long time in all the neighboring churches and congregations, in all the country round, even to a great distance. So that my opinion, when first broached, appeared to the people exceeding singular, their views being very narrow. It appeared to them that all the world almost was against me. And my most crafty opposers have improved this advantage, and have abundantly represented me as all alone in my opinion. Many of the people who at length came to have their spirits much raised, and were brought to join in violent measures, that came slowly into it, after having been long practiced with and indefatigable endeavors used to engage and inflame them. There are about 20 heads of families, besides others, that were women and young people, who ever appeared openly against the proceedings of the town, and many others have appeared friendly to me. And there is not a little reason to think that there are many more, especially women and youth, that would appear so, if they dare. For a person, by appearing my friend at Northampton, so much as openly to discountenance my being turned out of the pulpit, exposes himself to immediate persecution of his neighbors, and perhaps of his nearest friends. I mean, he falls under their great resentment, loses all their friendship, and is everywhere the object of reproach. It is to be considered that these things have happened when God is greatly withdrawn, and religion was very low, not only at Northampton, but all over New England. I believe the devil is greatly alarmed by the opposition made to Mr. Stoddard's doctrine and the agreeable practice, which had been so long established at Northampton, and so extensively in the country, and which he found his account and hope for greater consequences and more agreeable to him. And God, for wise ends, has allowed him to exert himself in an extraordinary manner in opposition, as God ordinarily does when truth is in the birth. But I am drawn out to an unexpected length in my observation on these things, and have not left myself room nor time for some other things that I would willingly write, and must therefore refer you to my letters to my other correspondents in Scotland, particularly Mr. John McLaurin, Mr. James Robe, Mr. William McCulloch, and John Erskine. To some of them I have been sending a particular account of my present circumstances and things which have lately passed relating to them. I would only say in general that I've had a call to settle at Stockbridge, a place on the western borders of New England next to the province of New York, about 36 miles from Albany and about 40 miles west from Northampton, the place where Mr. John Sargent was minister and missionary to the Indians. I am both called by the church here, constituted partly of English and partly of Indians, and am appointed missionary to the Indians by the Commissioners for Indian Affairs in Boston, agreeable to what you suggest in your letter, as though you had been able to foresee future events, when you say perhaps you are to be employed where the gospel has been little understood or attended to. I suppose this place will, for the future, be the place of my ordinary abode, though it will be some months before I can remove my family. I have no leisure at present to write on that subject you speak of, namely impressions and supposed immediate revelations, though I own the vast importance of the subject. I've begun to write something against the Americans before the late controversy broke out with my people, which broke me off from it, and obliged me to write on that controversy. And now lately Mr. Solomon Williams of Lebanon has wrote a book in answer to mine on that subject, which I think myself obliged to answer if God gives opportunity. I have much to teach me to behave as a pilgrim and stranger on the earth, but in the midst of troubles and difficulties I receive many mercies. Particularly I have great reason with abundant thankfulness to take notice of the great kindness of friends in Scotland. Blessed be God who never forsakes those that trust in him, and never wants instruments for the conveyance of his goodness and liberality to those who suffer in his cause. I shall take care that there be conveyed with this letter to you one of my farewell sermons, and the result of the council that sat at Northampton the last May. Remember me, dear sir, at the throne of grace, with regard to all my trials, and with regard to my new circumstances and the important service I have undertaken in this place. Please, in your next letter, inform me what family you have and of their state. I am, sir, your most affectionate friend and brother, Jonathan Edwards.